think, you know, not every company is so fortunate as to have an unlimited budget for their security. And so the thing that I would say that those enterprises need to do is really commit to understanding their risk better. Because only when they understand the risk to their resilience in a measurable way, potentially in a quantifiable way, can they go back to their enterprise and say, look, this is the cost to getting better, to getting stronger, whether it's in security investment or in preparation.
Do you want to hear about the latest developments in the cyber market and learn best practices and thought leadership from cyber insurance and security experts? We talk all things cyber insurance industry, international growth, cyber claims, and more. Welcome to the Cybersecurity and Insurance Leaders Podcast.
Michael Phillips, thank you very much for coming on to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Looking forward to chatting.
I'm really looking forward to chatting with you and maybe introduce you to some of the audience. I assume a lot of people already know who you are, but maybe we could kick it off. Just maybe tell us a bit about yourself, your company, and your team.
Sure. Thank you. So my name is Michael Phillips. I lead the claims and incident management functions at Resilience. Resilience is a relatively new player on the scene of cyber insurance. We combine insurance and security solutions for firms in the middle market. And I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today about trends that we're seeing. I also happen to chair the Ransomware Task Force, along with a few other folks from public and private sector. And, you know, just really excited to be with you today.
Ah, cool. Well, so it's interesting, you know, I think the whole concept of insurance plus cybersecurity, you know, obviously was something that I always really enjoyed. And one of the reasons I jumped into from the security side into the insurance side of things. You know, it seems like there's a few different, you know, maybe MGAs or insurers out there that are combining these things to different degrees. What would you say maybe are the main differentiators for yourselves?
Oh, thank you. So, you know, I think the first thing that I would highlight is that we see cyber risk comprehensively or holistically. You know, it's not just a risk transfer problem. It's not just a challenge for, you know, offering a good insurance policy that pays its claims, but it's also something that enterprises of all sizes have to address proactively, you know, through strong security practices, strong teams that, you know, have good business processes in place. And for too long, those conversations and those investments that enterprises have made have been siloed into different departments within their companies. And as a result, there's a mismatch or a disconnect. So the insurance might not respond as the security professionals or the IT professionals might hope it would. And the security practitioners, the IT guys, they're not necessarily getting the investments that they'd like to see from a business perspective. And so we think cyber risk really is one conversation around resilience, you know, our fortunate name. And so we're hoping to drive solutions that really respond to where each and every company is. You know, you're exactly right, Anthony. I think many of the leaders in our space, and I include you certainly amongst them, really a pioneer, realize that cyber is different. You know, the threat actors are always creating new ways to attack. The technologies are ever changing, and the legal regimes around cyber risk are also becoming ever more complicated. So it's a moving target. And to hit that target, you really do need to combine the best of an insurance solution with security solutions that fit the company that's trying to solve it.
Yeah, no, sounds good. That is a great name for what you guys are trying to accomplish. One of the things I like to talk about with folks are our geographies. Where are you guys really focused?
Sure. So we have been in the cyber insurance market for about 2 years now. And there we've been focused exclusively on the United States. Middle market enterprises have been our client base, you know, and I would say true middle market. So firms that actually approach the large risk space, you know, publicly traded firms, as well as larger private enterprises. You know, one thing that I'm really excited about is expanding that footprint. And so later in July, we'll be formally opening our London office. We've built a great team that's prepared to underwrite business, whether it's out of Canada, of course, the London market, you know, the birthplace of insurance, as well as on continental Europe. So, you know, I think right now we're, you know, we're really proud of and want to convey and continue to grow on our success in the United States. But we're really looking across the ocean for some new opportunities as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think the international market's really exciting. You know, cyber insurance kind of came from the US and obviously is a lot more mature there in terms of market penetration and competition, but overseas.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's exciting. And Anthony, I know, you know, you've been there, you know, having those first conversations about the value proposition of true specialty, affirmative cyber insurance, you know, having those conversations for the first time is a lot of fun. Introducing the product to brokers, introducing the opportunity for companies who hadn't thought about cyber insurance and about the ways in which that can really alleviate some of the pressures that they have. I mean, that's so much fun. So we're really looking forward to bringing the sort of the resilient story over to London as well.
Okay, great. I'll look forward to having you here. What would you say, you know, your company strength? I'm kind of getting a feel for it from what you said so far, but what would you say your company strength in cyber is?
So, you know, like our name, you know, I think that we really are focused on how best we can support and provide resilience for our client base or our potential client base. And so it actually is a fairly bespoke or tailored solution that we provide to our clients. You know, I'd like to think that, you know, the strength of our claim service and incident management service is one piece of that. The network of incident response providers that we bring to bear, you know, it's almost a services proposition for many companies who are looking at cyber risk as something that is complex and potentially overwhelming. You know, but you've asked about our differentiators, and there, you know, I'd also point to some of the security technology and modeling that we provide, you know, sort of on a packaged and tailored basis for our clients to give them a better sense of what they can do proactively, you know, left of boom, before the bad thing happens, so that they've got a better sense of what the impact would be, so they can make better arguments to their boards about, you know, where investments would be wisely made. And then just to truly to help them prepare. So my team, along with my risk and engineering colleagues, we sit down with each and every one of our primary insureds, and we really do walk them through our threat intelligence, our risk modeling, you know, the claims trends, losses and incidents that we see, how do they happen, how can they be mitigated, and really exercise the client, and then point them to the next steps on their resilience journey. Provide them with an action plan and provide them tools that can help them take those next steps. You know, one thing, Anthony, that I imagine you see and I, you know, love to hear it is that hear about it is that resilience for many enterprises and certainly in the middle and larger spaces, it's not an on-off switch. It's not like you just have to reconfigure that one machine, you know, in the head office, and then you're safe.
Yeah.
You know, and so when we see a potential client, we often find that they are on a multi-year journey to get to, say, best in class security for their industry or, you know, against their peers. And we want to be a good partner for them to really take them from, you know, where they are today to where they really want to be in the future.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You're right. Resilience definitely isn't a, you know, you can look across large books of like SME business and just say, it's everybody got MFA, everybody got backups, you know, you're done. I think as you get bigger, that's kind of like the companies go like this in size, but maybe the complexity of the problem and the difficulty kind of goes up a little bit like this, because it just, you run into system complexity issues. And that's where resilience, I think, really comes in, because if you're going to assume that there's going to be some system on your network that's going to be compromised, and you're probably not going to, because you're not going to be able to manage everything. You're going to lose stuff. Just IT governance is so difficult. And when you're talking about a scale, you've got 100,000 systems. It doesn't fit in anybody's head. There's not like an IT person you can walk up and say, hey, what are your servers? You know, and they're like, you know, maybe they even in a tiny company, they'll know it off the top of their head, or, you know, in a smaller midsize, maybe they get a little bit of documentation. Once it gets really big, it's just an almost unsolvable issue to get everything. So I think just these resilience design concepts are the only way you get past like a complete blow up when you get hit.
I think you're exactly right. When we look at our clients, we're not trying to be everything to everybody or to just push out a cookie cutter or commoditized solution and just say, hey, use this and you've got control. You didn't have it before, but now you have it because you bought the widget. You know, instead, what we think, and you know, we are offering, you know, our underwriting expertise, our policy to a subset of that middle market space. We want partners. Yeah. We want clients who want to be partners and who want us to help them tailor a journey that really fits for them. You know, and so because of that technical complexity that I think the market as a whole is really trying to wrap their minds around, you know, we really just don't think that the sort of a one size fits all solution works for them. So it's for me, it's very exciting. And for my team, you know, because we're always sitting down, we're looking against the trends that we see that are really specific to an industry vertical or a geography or a legal regime, and then trying to translate that to a client and say, look, this conversation is one of one, you know, it is tailored to you. We've done our homework and this is what we think we would be worried about if we were in your shoes. And then here's some solutions that we think we can provide.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think that is one of the things I always loved about insurance. So there's a couple of elements of it in terms of where I think it's really good at feeding back into cybersecurity from advisory or from like kind of a knowledge standpoint rather than, I mean, there's lots of things that contributes, but a couple of things that really come to mind is looking across, like you said, the sort of legal, the technical, and just kind of the other part of that is packaging all those different pieces into a, here's really your care about. These are the areas where we're seeing from our claims data where this is really going to get nasty if it goes wrong. And here's some ways you can.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's middle market companies, larger enterprises, they've been squeezed in so many directions in the last couple of years. The market's been more difficult for insurance. But let's remember why. You know, it's because of this squeeze. You know, the cyber crime rates have been spiking. The ransomware gangs are more sophisticated than ever before. Every company comes to us and they say, yes, we manufacture widgets or we provide this service, but really we're a tech company, Michael. You know, really we're a data company. You know, and they're being pushed commercially to deploy more tech than ever before, to manage more data than ever before. And then think about the legal exposure too. You know, it's just a lot of complexity that they didn't have. You know, many enterprises didn't have, you know, just a few short years ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think everybody's sort of a tech company in a lot of ways. Cool. Well, so I guess, you know, maybe transitioning a bit into, you know, some thoughts around cyber and things going on in the world. You know, is there anything, it seems like there's a lot of beliefs out there, you know, and people get these ideas and certain, it's almost like everybody, like you get groups of people start to believe things. You're like, well, I don't understand how any of that really makes any sense to me. So when you look out and you look at all these things going on, you know, or beliefs that you see, what's something that you really disagree with that you don't think is right at all?
Well, as a claims guy, you might not be surprised to hear me say this, but there are a couple that I really want to highlight for you and your audience, of course. The first is that cyber insurance does not pay claims. I actually think that cyber insurance, you know, across markets, I'm not just speaking for our firm, you know, have done an extraordinary job of paying claims, paying them quickly, paying them effectively, and being a real partner alongside the client when they're in a crisis. Mm. And that's one of the most exciting parts about our younger insurance product and our younger space in the cyber or in the insurance industry is that we're delivering on the promise that underwriters make every day. And we're doing it not just through, you know, the check at the end or the wire transfer of the reimbursement, you know, that you'd see in any insurance product, but by providing services that sit alongside you and are there for you in the moment of crisis to be a real partner and help you endure and recover as quickly as possible. So this idea that cyber insurance is always looking for a way not to pay claims, you know, something that I think is really harmful, a really harmful misconception in an age in which cyber insurance has never been more important to enterprises. I think we've done a decent job, my peers and I, of conveying the value proposition and demonstrating our ability and, you know, eagerness to pay covered claims as effectively and provide services that help firms bounce back and become resilient again. But I think that there still is a skeptical audience, sometimes amongst security practitioners who have never really been engaged before. You know, their CFO or their risk manager went out and bought insurance. There wasn't a culture, at the enterprise level of, hey, we should talk to our CISO about what we're doing. And so there's been a historical disconnect. And I think at Resilience, we're truly committed to breaking down some of those silos. And I think the market's done, there's been a number of initiatives to try and break that down, but it still exists. And so that one is really important to me. There are a couple others, but that one's.
I think that, the not paying claims one is definitely a something you hear a lot in the cybersecurity community, but I think it's challenging for cybersecurity people to understand policy types. You know, so when you see, it's a property policy, should that cover cyber? You know, and then you see controversy around it and the insurance company saying, of course not, the security person is looking at that. Or even worse, the security press, who of course is, they're looking for clicks. You know, they're going to put some sort of what I would call trolling. I think, you find it where the press is trolls people almost a lot just to get them to click on something to read it, get those eyeballs.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And, I'm an American. I don't always love my health insurance company. I don't always love my auto insurance company. I know that to many consumers of personal insurance or of commercial insurance, that maybe they've had a bad experience or they've heard stories of insurers not eager to be a partner at the point of risk, at the point of crisis. And so, I do think we have an obligation to continue to tell our story, but we should really be proud of it. And I think that, an objective look, and maybe someone would say I'm biased, but I think an objective look, we're doing a great job, and we're every day we wake up looking forward to helping our clients through crisis and through cyber events. So a story I hope to, be a part of and help highlight all those great people who every day are working through insurance to help firms bounce back.
Yeah. Well, I think the helping thing's interesting and kind of fighting against cybercrime. One of the things I noticed you worked on is the ransomware task force. What could you tell me about that?
Sure. I was very fortunate to be asked to be one of the co-chairs and it's a real wonderful opportunity and experience. But the thing that I'd highlight is the need for public and private partnership around some aspects of cyber risk. And ransomware is a great example of that, because for too long, companies and their insurance companies, for that matter, were enduring the ransomware epidemic alone, essentially. That ransomware victims felt like they had nowhere to turn. But if they had insurance, they had a value proposition, a safety net, a trampoline really to bounce back from them. And so cyber insurers have really been a bulwark in the face of what has been an extraordinary epidemic of cybercrime, really driven by the ransomware actors. And so the first thing I'd say is that the task force, which brought together major private sector cybersecurity leaders and across technology, financial institutions, and other major enterprises, and public sector experts, the law enforcement, the federal government, UK and European leaders as well, is to bring to bear, the cyber insurer's experience. I think that so many folks in other aspects of public policy leadership or of private sector, we're not really aware of all the data that we hold, all the expertise that we have developed, and the way that cyber insurance works. And so, I'd like to think, one of the core sensitivities that I had and the work that I tried to bring to bear, but with some wonderful partners in cyber insurance, was to try to translate our experience and make sort of defeat some of these misconceptions. One of which is this idea, which I think is much lesser now, but still exists out there, that cyber insurers are forcing victims to pay ransoms. Nothing could be further from the truth in my experience. And in fact, the fact that cyber insurance is offering so much by way of coverage, by way of services to help companies bounce back. We're really putting a governance apparatus informally or in the private sector. So not true, you know, regulatory rules, but order and expertise around a victim's resolution of their ransomware event, I think is a wonderful strength. So yeah, the coverages that we offer for data restoration, for data recovery, for business interruption loss, for income loss, for legal, forensic, technical expertise to be brought to bear to build a roadmap for a company in that crisis and figure out how do they get back up and running as best as possible. If we didn't offer that, so many victims would look around, not know where to turn, not report the matter, and ultimately maybe pay ransoms that shouldn't be paid. So, you know, that was a story I really wanted to bring to bear with the task force.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is, like I said earlier, one of the things that I like about insurance is how it sort of streamlines a comprehensive message. And, you know, it's not just on the proactive, which we were talking about then, but it helps a lot on the reactive as well, because when you go through that on a regular basis, it just, it kind of, you get used to it. I almost want to say, you sort of go, look, this is what's going to happen. Here's how it's going to work. Don't stress out. You know, this is all the norm, and you get very used to step-by-step. Here's all the comprehensive way to deal with these things in a way that's going to minimize the impact against you.
You're exactly right. Cyber insurance firms and their partners in incident response, we're doing this every day. We bring to a client in crisis steady expertise about every nook and cranny of the decision-making that goes into recovery. And so, you know, I think that public policymakers in particular who are awakening to the national security risks and the disruption to private enterprise that ransomware brings are also awakening to the value and the expertise that has been developed through private investment, through private enterprise, through market competition within the cyber insurance space. So, you know, the task force, I will say, we put out a report last year that laid out a series of recommendations for both private sector development of resolve and preparation, but also public sector changes. And our work continues. We're looking to drive further public policy change, as well as continue to mature the private sector's preparation and response capabilities in the face of the epidemic. So it's an exciting time and some progress there.
Okay. I guess just, you know, transitioning a bit from talking about beliefs, you know, to maybe actions, you know, what kind of things do you see people out there doing today that you really think they should stop doing that? You know, there's too much of it going on. We've got to change this. It's got to stop.
Oh, that's good. I like that question a lot. Let me give that a dramatic pause. You know, I think amongst enterprises, there might still be a view, certainly among some security professionals, but a lot of enterprise leaders, that cybersecurity is purely a security problem. That mm-hmm. you know, you just have to buy the right tools, and that's the end of the conversation around cybersecurity. Whether it's ones that are quite strong, or whether they're market leading firms or tools, you know, the widget, the whiz banger, the doppelganger, you know, that one tool is never going to be a perfect solution. So, you know, for those companies who have the resources to buy, you know, cutting edge technology, I you know, I'm not discouraging the deployment of, you know, advanced endpoint protection, multi-factor authentication tools, you know, other defense in depth technologies that really make the company more secure. But that can't be the end of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So for those firms that have the resources, they've got to be thinking about their business processes. The you know, they've got to be more holistically measuring the risk to their resilience and thinking about those risks that they want to hold onto and those that they want to transfer to the insurance market. But then for other companies, I think, you know, not every company is so fortunate as to have an unlimited budget for their security. And so the thing that I would say that those enterprises need to do is really commit to understanding their risk better, Because only when they understand the risk to their resilience in a measurable way, potentially in a quantifiable way, can they go back to their enterprise and say, look, this is the cost to getting better, to getting stronger, whether it's in security investment or in preparation. It's too many folks only develop an incident response plan, Anthony, and I know you know this.
Yeah.
After they've gone through a real crisis.
And then they realize why it's good to plan for it, even if it ends up happening in a totally different way than plan. At least you've gone through the thought process a lot of times.
Yeah, no, some of these conversations might feel to an expert like yourself, like, I feel like I'm still preaching this message, but gospel is gospel for a reason sometimes. And, still it is the case that so many enterprises haven't developed that plan for the crisis. That can make all the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, we did kind of talk about that sort of preparation, and really without that preparation, you're really going to be in a lot of trouble. I do think the insurers can help, with that as you guys do, which is, all right, well, you haven't prepped. We have prepped. We'll do our best to help you. You would have been far better off if we'd done this before. But as a claims team, we can assist you.
Sure. Well, on the one hand, the fact that some of the buyers of cyber insurance are buying it precisely to say, look, there's my incident response team. I've got ready access, at Resilience, we have an emergency hotline 24/7 staffed by our IR and claims experts. Some of our competitors do something similar. The fact that buyers may rely on that is not the worst thing in the world, but you got to know what your plan is. So I think oftentimes what you see is that a company may have different executives at similar levels who say, well, I want to drive the train on this. And others saying, well, no, hold on. We don't know what we don't know. And we really need to rely on, lean on experts from the insurance market. So just sort of getting to square one sometimes is extraordinarily difficult.
So I guess, what you're describing puts, I think, a lot of pressure maybe on the cyber claims teams. Do you see weaknesses in these teams, or what kind of gaps do you think the cyber claims teams need to close to really be good at delivering the value you're talking about?
Well, I'm very proud to be in cyber claims and I work with such wonderful colleagues in my career to have met so many wonderful cyber claims folks. That said, Anthony, I think that there are a couple things that we're all striving to do better on each and every day. The first is what I call maybe a gap in expertise when it comes to the technology or mm-hmm. the first party, to an insurance, to an underwriter, I would say the first party management. So not so much the incident response, the management of a potential data breach up through and including, conclusions about privacy exposure and the need to follow, US data breach law or the GDPR. But those other technical aspects of incident response and recovery. So operational response, getting tools, services, computer systems back to the level of functionality that they had before the incident. I think that claims teams must continue to invest in true technical and security expertise so that way they are better tracking what's happening, offering better advice throughout the life cycle of an event, and also deriving better intelligence and market intelligence data about how these things happen and how they can be prevented. So I think that an investment in we've got the insurance expertise, but we need more of the security and technical expertise to really live the incidents with our clients. I think that'd probably be the first thing I'd, put my thumb on.
It's a gap. Yeah. And it makes sense, just looking at the evolution of it. From where the insurance came from.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, and I'm a lawyer myself, so I'm not in a glass house throwing stones. But you look at what I think are probably the strongest cyber claims teams across the markets. Many of them are built out of lawyers, whether privacy lawyers or insurance lawyers, mm-hmm. who have had to who have been already at the top of their game in those fields, but now are dealing with a much more technological and cybersecurity oriented aspect of their practice. So, you know, you highlighted, where did the product come from? Where did this business line come from? You know, 10 years ago, a cyber policy was really almost exclusively focused on the possibility of a lawsuit on the other side. Mm-hmm. You know, the claims that underwriters were worried about was, oh my God, is this the data breach class action that's going to impact my book? And to a company, the concern that they had was the same. Michael, is this going to be the type of event that's going to cause me to be dragged into the Southern District of New York, and I'm going to have to pay a multi-million dollar settlement? Today, in our view, the perils facing companies in the middle market are much more operational first party. They are about the income lost during that downtime. You know, they're about the ability to service your clients during the cyber crisis, or continuing to manufacture the products that you make on schedule and, and with the same level of expertise that you always do, in a world in which, if that computer system is compromised, can you still do it? So I think we've got that transition to continue to make, to meet where the product is, which is a very fulsome first party and third party insurance product that's designed to help you bounce back from either type of event.
Okay. Well, so I guess looking at your role then, what would you say you really focus on in terms of metrics? Mm-hmm.
So, there are a few things that I'm looking for, of course, and it depends on which stakeholder I'm hoping to report to and guide and provide market intelligence or business intelligence to. The first thing that I think of is the client always. You know, we're pretty client centric at Resilience. So our responsiveness is first and foremost for us. So, you know, I mentioned briefly our emergency response hotline and our team that's designed to sort of be ready to deploy at a moment's notice. And, you know, I track it very closely to make sure that clients aren't calling us and going to a third party or going to a voicemail or an answering service. You know, I want them to know that even if they discover a crisis at the, in the midnight hours, that we will be at the ready and be deploying services that can help them bounce back. So that'd be one metric I'd highlight here. You know, I also believe that cyber claims teams need to truly derive lessons from the losses. You know, that's core to insurance development across any product, and just in the way that an engineer would learn why do these boilers explode, this should feed right back into our engineering, our risk engineering, and the policies that we provide and the risk selection that we have. You know, our underwriters want to know why bad things are happening and whether their risk selection is as strong as they want it to be. So the second metric I would highlight is just how much data can we gather while being a super strong partner for firms that are bouncing back. So, are we learning about, where the technology may have failed or what business process could have been improved to prevent the loss. You know, we try to derive lessons whenever we can.
Okay. So, it's kind of responsiveness and feedback, to different parties, I guess.
Yeah, the one thing I love about claims, and I'm often jealous of the underwriters. Everyone loves the underwriters, but I'd say the one thing I love most about claims is that we have many stakeholders. We are client focused. We're helping them bounce back. That gives you that sense of like everything I do every day is helping someone, which I love. But the second thing is that I have to act with integrity every day because I do need to answer to the claims themselves, the policyholders, claim for what they believe is covered, and also answer to our carriers, our reinsurers, our underwriters, who want to know that the contract is being upheld properly. And so, I just love that sort of multi-sided aspect to it, making sure that the answer to one person is the answer to everybody, And so, it's a fascinating position to be in within the insurance ecosystem.
Okay, cool. Well, so I guess if you had, if you were able to organize a party with a bunch of your peers and take everybody out for drinks,
I don't know.
And if they still would talk. and still talk about work. What kind of questions would you ask them, or what question would you want to ask? What's your highest priority question you'd love to get from your peers?
Well, thank you, Anthony. And I would hope that folks would come and would humor me to talk about business at the pub after an hour. I don't think I'm unique in this, but I'm really fascinated right now by systemic cyber risk.
Okay.
Questions. I think that there's some confidence that we've got the market as a whole has a good handle on what makes a company resilient against ransomware events, which is, I'm hoping is true. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. But where I think our attentions are focused on sort of big thorny problems, we're thinking about those systemic or catastrophic events that are harder to model, harder to predict, and maybe not insurable, depending on the scale of them or the threat actor or what's exploited. And so, today, this is cutting edge stuff. Always on your podcast, Anthony. The Department of Homeland Security they formed a cyber safety review board.
Yeah.
Modeled on the airline safety transportation board, which studies events and says, "Oh, here's what we can learn from it." Today, they released a report on the Log4j vulnerability, trying to talk to whether the Log4j vulnerabilities have been exploited, whether they could be exploited in the future. How did this software vulnerability, how does it continue to exist and promulgate across so many different types of software applications and across so many industries? And, I'm looking forward to sort of downloading it this morning and giving it a good read because, the risks that are so large and that could impact so many enterprises all at once are the thorniest problems and the most challenging problems for insurance. So, and certainly for me to imagine what those claims would be like and how many companies could be impacted and what they would need in their moment of crisis. I think it's more than a thought experiment and something that we've got to be ready for to make sure that the services ecosystem is ready to help these enterprises launch back because the world's never been more dangerous in cyber.
Yeah, it's it is interesting on the aggregation front. I do think people are transitioning from thinking just about it from maybe an underwriting perspective or a reinsurance perspective to thinking a bit about it from how do we handle the claims volume? How do we, do we have enough vendors? Are there enough incident response people out there who aren't going to be conflicted? Like, that's the thing people underestimate. It's really easy to get conflicts if you've got some kind of widespread propagation because you're going to have the same vendors, potentially being asked to support opposing parties.
No, I mean, so you're exactly right. I think that, insurance has thought about the big one across every aspect of insurable risk, whether it's a hurricane or an earthquake. I think now we are really putting our shoulders down. And that's why if I had a party, I would ask all of these experts that I would invite to this. I'd say, well, how are you thinking about it? And I think, there are some cutting edge approaches being explored and some of that might involve public-private partnership again, focusing on, hey, where is the government, the insurer of last resort? Some of it may involve, insurance linked securities, and trying to create a market for sort of that cyber catastrophe bond that everyone likes to talk about. Mm-hmm. But for me, it always starts with the claim or the incident. What do we really think is going to happen and what would be the maximum sort of probable loss in that scenario? And so, I think Log4j is an interesting phenomenon. People like to talk about, a major cloud outage and how would the market handle or respond to that? And there are a few other scenarios that I think, and Anthony, I know, you thought deeply about these things, but that the market's really studied and said, hey, if this happened, they hacked the power grid, they hacked the power grid, how would we respond? What would that look like? And I think we're unfortunately, it feels like the world might, you know, and I don't mean to conclude on a emotional note, but it does feel like that, you know, a lot of the internet is coming apart. The Council on Foreign Relations issued a report this week as well. Now I'm really nerding out with my new glasses, but the first sentence of the report was the age of the global internet is over. You know, and like now you could tell me whether that's true or what that means, but it does feel like there's an increased splintering across the technological infrastructure. And that's as almost as scary as there being one unified point of failure at Amazon cloud services. You know,
I think it's kind of always been there. I think there is this underlying trend where the internet, well, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was almost completely, you know, American dominated. I think it's much less so now. If we talk about a splintering internet, let's say 15 years ago, probably not, because it was so heavily US focused. I think it's become a lot more global and is depended on in a more global way, but still, you know, you start to see countries, you know, sort of doing their own thing with it and putting up firewalls and, you know, policing things internally, which I don't know. Does it mean I think the trend's always been there. I think that is always an issue. I would say a stronger concern is in my mind is probably splintering commercially. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a desire for these different companies to kind of gain dominance. And again, that's another thread that's always been there. Right. You know, from the very early days of Microsoft and, you know, AOL and other sort of online services trying to find a way to you know, pull everything in to control it. You know, I think those trends are there. I think they'll continue. Not as scared about it yet, but good to keep an eye.
All right. Well, the next time I have a nightmare, I'm going to call you right after, which I do already.
It's funny. Like I feel like I'm the ranty old guy now where it's like, well, I remember back in the day, you know, and just, you know, a lot of the things we run into today just remind me of things that were around 25 years ago.
To that point, I just really want to emphasize that because public policy makers, and you know, maybe it's always fun to kick on the people in Washington, and I'm going to do that now. You know, they are starting to ask questions about, oh my God, what are our systemic cyber risks?
Yeah.
We should really think about that. We should measure that. And folks like you, Anthony, you know, I'd like to think I've been, putting my shoulder down on the topic. The cyber insurance marketplace has been investing deeply in studying the systemic and the catastrophic aspects of cyber risk for decades, right? And we've written the reports, we've modeled it, we've tried to price it, we've tried to figure it out, you know. And so that disconnect between the expertise we've developed in the private sector and the expertise the public sector wishes they had, you know, I'm very fond of trying to connect people in that space.
It makes sense. I think having been so focused on it, the insurance industry, it is something they can really provide back into the world. Let me shift gears for a minute. Let's talk. We were talking kind of big global concepts. Maybe, you know, and we started out talking a bit about resilience. What would you say, you know, your company's biggest challenge is right now?
Sure. So, God help me, I'm going to answer this question honestly and see what happens. If the next podcast is with unemployed Michael Phillips, then I look forward to reading that post on LinkedIn too. You know, I think that for any of the insurtechs, I think that right now there is a conversation being had about sort of the sustainability of the insurtech marketplace and also whether the differentiators will truly get incorporated into the broader insurance market as well, you know, or whether it's sort of they're here for a couple of years because Silicon Valley has taken a shine to cyber risk.
Yeah.
But when that goes away, will these players go away? And so, you know, that, you know, I think that has impact that we'd like to overcome, which is we are here. We're backed by major insurance and reinsurers who truly support our vision. And we want our clients as well to be excited about engaging with us for a longer term journey. You know, that's how we built our enterprise, is to be a partner for that long term. And so we, you know, when we have our conversations, when we engage with our clients, you know, I often want to highlight, take a moment to highlight that, you know, resilience is not looking for, you know, a couple of nice press releases, one fancy fundraise, and then everyone gets rich and goes home. You know, what we want to build is a lasting partnership with our client base that's focused on resilience and helping those clients go from you know, the beginning of their resilience journey to a much more advanced and mature place where they truly are measuring their risk to their resilience and then securing it where they can and ensuring it where they must. So, you know, I think that's a challenge. That's a challenge that we face. We're not alone in facing that challenge, but one that we're excited to try and meet each and every day.
Okay. Well, so how about cyber warfare? You know,
we're
going to talk, just going back global again. But I was thinking of resilience's place in sort of this global, you know, environment where there's a lot of geopolitical things going on, war in Ukraine. How has it impacted you guys, and how do you think it'll kind of shape things going forward?
Sure. Well, I'm very fortunate to be able to share with you that, you know, our client base has, broadly speaking, not been impacted by the war on Ukraine, apart from it triggering a reassessment of their operations globally, you know, potentially their exposure to these things. It's been an opportunity for us to talk about some of the advanced cybersecurity threats that do exist out there and how to proactively defend yourself against those. But, you know, it hasn't radically altered our business or threatened our clients as of yet. I do think that the war in Ukraine has really put an exclamation point on an assessment that I think predates the war in Ukraine, which is that cyber warfare or hostile cyber operations or all of those things that go down the spectrum of danger and of attributability, you know, all the way to like to petty cyber crime. You know, that we have to, the insurance market needs the strongest possible understanding and clarity around what events constitute each of those types of things. And I think also, you know, the public sector does, or the public, you know, the national security policymakers do. You know, folks like to ask, well, what is cyber war and how does an insurance claims executive interpret an event as to whether it's cyber war or not? And I would sort of put that back on public policymakers or on our law. You know, there isn't, you know, one confirmed, you know, chiseled in stone definition of these things that the United States or our allies in the UK or in continental Europe apply to what is cyber warfare. And so I actually think, again, this is an area where cyber insurance has really, you know, this sector has invested in expertise and understanding and even contractual or policy language that meets the moment of what this risk is. So, you know, I guess coming, you know, trying to, you know, you and I are very, you know, keen to, you know, we turn our global switch on and then we come back to Earth. You know, we are amongst the players who is evaluating whether there needs to be changes to the policy language to make sure that we are clearly responding to and in the most satisfying way to all of our stakeholders this threat and what is insurable and what is not insurable about it. You know, it's certainly a fascinating area. I'm so happy that we haven't had, you know, sort of the bystander hit with a cyber weapon from Russia, or, you know, targeting Ukraine, or that our client base hasn't broadly been hit by, you know, sort of disruption that was disruptive activity that's really targeted this geopolitical moment. But it's only going to get, you know, again, this is something that it feels like is only going to be more prevalent and more relevant to the market as we go.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you. So, great. Well, those are probably the hard questions. Few questions I like to close with. How did you originally get into the insurance industry?
Okay. So I am amongst the many who say that they did not, they did not develop a roadmap at age five, which had insurance claims written on it. I was a lawyer in private practice at a Wall Street law firm that put me in business disputes more generally. Okay. We had a number of financial and technology clients. And so I was always a bit adjacent to the insurance market, but I wasn't doing or didn't anticipate doing claims and coverage work until ultimately I did go to a law firm called Clyde & Co, which folks may know in the insurance market as, you know, one of the major international law firms serving insurers. And there, my initial practice was not cyber focused either. I came across it hearing about some of my colleagues who had been in it for longer, and I got to work with their practice group and work on policy wordings and a few, you know, sticky initial cyber issues, you know, what I think of as more of the closer to the beginning of our story in the market. And I really just got hooked on it. The fact that this was one area where the insurance market was still developing, the policy language was changing, the law, the technologies were ever changing, and the threats were metastasizing. It wasn't the same ISO property form that was written 180 years ago by, you know, came down in stone tablets and had not changed. And the perils themselves had not changed either, or hadn't changed in some of these other areas. You know, a fire to a warehouse only happens a few different ways. But cyber attacks continue to, excite, delight, and terrify me every day. And so too, we're in a world in which we can sort of build something new. And, I've always been excited about building something new with wonderful people in the market.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was thinking, cyber did not come over on the Mayflower.
That's right. Lloyd's Coffee House, they did not talk about this. You know, I'm sure they didn't they didn't worry about the threats to their printing presses or any of that.
Yeah, that's funny. What would you recommend to anyone that wants to have a successful career in the insurance or legal industry?
Sure. So I think the first thing that I would advise someone who wanted to thrive in insurance or in the law, you know, adjacent to insurance, you know, representing insurance companies, is to be keenly focused on your reputation. You know, and by that I mean one thing I love about insurance is that it's an infinite game. We're playing with the same partners every day, whether it's an underwriter trading with a broker and having that trading relationship that can go on for an entirety of a career, or a policyholder who renews every year and who, when they have that claim that they're hoping is a 1 in 20 year event or a, you know, 1 in 100 year event, that the claims decision making, the claims services meet the moment and fulfill the promises. You know, what I found is people will remember whether you were honest, whether you're trying your best, whether you're trying to bring to bear expertise and develop your expertise. And that will help you in the future. And on the other hand, if you cut a corner, or if you take a step that might be in the short term feel advantageous, but not truly in the long term, they'll remember that too. And so, I'd like to think that I try my best every day, and that folks know that, and that's helped develop both business partner relationships and friendships that I wouldn't, that I don't think I would have had in other segments, sectors, if I had stayed in other areas. And so I think that's a great strength of the insurance market. And it's a good rule of thumb for anybody trying to build their career.
So it's, it sounds like, focus on reputation and relationships, not cutting corners, understand that it's kind of a long game is really the.
Yeah, I think that, and maybe the last thing I'll say is, the cyber insurance market needs more cyber expertise. So I think that no one who is just getting started should feel like, well, I'm never going to advance, or I'm never going to make the grade. We need people who are willing to study, who are willing to, take that extra training course, or start from the ground and learn on the job. So I think that it remains just an extraordinary opportunity for folks. And we need folks.
Yeah, definitely. Well, great. So I guess closing question, you can directly address the audience. Is there anything the audience can help you with? What would you ask them to do?
Oh, gosh. Wow.
That's a tough one, I know.
Wow. What would I ask? What would I ask for? You know, I think that communication is so important. And I suppose what I'd ask is that we not be shy about telling our story. Whether you are a broker watching this or a claims manager or an underwriter, a reinsurer or an incident response partner. You know, I think that the storytelling that we keep to ourselves, we might keep to ourselves because we don't want to brag or we don't want to, yeah, we're shy. You know, it actually is depriving the market, but the public about the true value that we bring every day. And so, you know, when Anthony and I talked mm-hmm. about some of these gaps in knowledge that I think might exist in the public sector, it's because yeah. we're not sharing our story. And when clients think that we're not paying claims or that we're not helping with ransomware epidemic, it's because we're not telling our story. So I suppose the ask would be that we start telling, we keep telling our stories and not be shy.
Yeah. Talk more, brag more, talk about what you do.
Yeah, I think so.
Self-promotion. I always love self-promotion. I think I do more of that. But
yeah, more of that. You know, everyone always says I'm very shy about that myself.
I think especially on the claim side, it's maybe a little bit less common that you see people being so public, being so open about a lot of things. You know, claims is certainly different than the underwriting side in that regard.
I agree.
So, well, cool. Well, it was great having you. Thank you very much for coming on the show and look forward to seeing you soon.
Oh, thank you so much, Anthony. It's always a pleasure to speak with the Asaris audience.
That's great. Thanks.
If you want to learn more about our host, Anthony, or his company, Asaris, visit asaris.com. ASCERIS.com. Thanks to our friends at Savoo for producing this episode with us. See you next time.